It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Allen, the victim says he did not disclose who he voted for, but that did not stop the crowd from mentioning Donald Trump. He says he does not believe he was targeted because of that, but it certainly didn't help calm the situation.
20 people on both sides at the bus stops, plus all the cars, and nobody did anything to help.
David Wilcox describing this brutal attack Wednesday afternoon captured on cell phone video, getting punched and kicked repeatedly as some bystanders cheered the attackers on, accusing the victim of voting for Donald Trump.
You voted Trump! You voted Trump!
They were laughing, yelling, beat that white boy.
Chicago police say the beating happened after a traffic accident in the city's North Lawndale neighborhood. When Wilcox asked the female driver about her insurance, he says she threw a punch.
And I wasn't expecting that. And the next thing I knew, there were three men coming from, I believe, the back seat, and I was getting hit from all sides.
You later see in the video Wilcox holding onto his car as it's driven away, keeping a hold for about a mile before letting go.
He was swerving, trying to get me to get off. And I knew if I let go then, I was dead.
The attack left Wilcox with bumps and bruises. Crisis responder Andrew Holmes passed out flyers this morning, hoping to help police track down the suspects.
You need to do the right thing and call and give these individuals up because it's just a matter of time before they're apprehended.
I hope they get caught. I'm going to be at every court date.
A witness says a racial slur prompted the attack. Wilcox says that is not true. He did not use a racial slur. We're live in North Lawndale. Will Jones, ABC 7, Eyewitness News.
All right, a story out of Chicago that happened just last week, and we never talked about it, but it is certainly the trend that people that support Donald Trump are under attack. Now, of course, the narrative is that Trump supporters are violent. They're the neo-Nazi racists, and we're going to get into that. But I think that the truth is, as we see pictures of the Trump rallies, remember the one in San Jose that was just unbelievable? They were attacking people as they were coming out of the Trump rally, jumping on them from the behind when they were just innocent people, then running them down and beating them and dragging them through parking lots. It's pretty amazing. And I think it's, you know, it's a blend of Black Lives Matter. It's a blend of white socialists, Marxists. It's just anarchists of all kinds, people who hate the rule of law, and either they are genuinely disgruntled about their circumstances or they are being misled by minds who are manipulating them. That's my personal opinion. I'm going to make the case. By the way, this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Well, you would be interested to know that the guy that was beaten and bruised in that video, which was taken off of YouTube, interesting. Isn't it funny how social media outlets just seem to be very selective in what they leave on and what they take off. So this was taken off of YouTube. It was language. And of course, you see Wilcox being beaten. And it was offensive, but, you know, not like someone was being killed. Not like somebody was, you know, but that was too much for YouTube. I'm sure there, you know, I would imagine there are rapper videos that are a whole lot worse than what that was. And yet they took it off. But it's been reinstated. You can find it. David Wilcox was 49. He didn't have a Trump sticker that I know of. He just was in this accident. And of course, he's surrounded by black citizens in the Lawndale community of Chicago who are yelling at him, calling him racial slurs and yelling at him for that's what you get for voting Trump. And that's about as clean as I can repeat. Okay, but here's the twist. The Public Interest Legal Foundation has interceded here on behalf of David Wilcox. And they have sent two letters to the Department of Justice demanding that they investigate this situation. The foundation sent one letter to Chris Herron, who's the chief of the voting section at the U.S. Department of Justice, and that letter states, in part, the statements of those encouraging the beating would support an investigation under Section 11B of the Voting Rights Act. Wilcox has said that the altercation began with a contact between the vehicle, but the release notes the egging on of the bystanders and goes on to state the attackers follow these racially and politically motivated suggestions. And then they go on to make a comparison between the DOJ investigation into the altercation between Michael Brown and Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri, that ultimately resulted in evidence vindicating Officer Wilson, but not before his career with the police department was ended. And then it says, your section has an opportunity here to help resolve that question with the attack on Mr. Wilcox. If the division does not vigorously pursue an investigation into whether the Voting Rights Act was violated as vigorously as it pursued other recent high-profile racially charged cases, such as in Ferguson, Missouri, it raises profound questions about the section's suitability to fairly enforce the laws as currently composed. And they sent a second letter as well. And just let me read this part of the letter, because I think it really helps us to understand why this organization led by the Public Interest Legal Foundation, headed by J. Christian Adams, is doing what they're doing. The right to participate in an election without fear of being beaten by a mob is one of the most fundamental rights. Americans should not have to fear political violence because they voted for Donald Trump. And this Justice Department needs to start enforcing the law no matter who the victim is. And certainly, I know that we all believe, almost everyone listening to me, wants justice. We want what's right. It doesn't matter about color. White racists should be punished and brought to justice, and so should black ones. We are all Americans. We are all one in this American process with equal rights as citizens, and we need to treat each other with respect, and there needs to be some sort of a consequence when we don't. All right, so there are all kinds of people stirring up all kinds of things in this country. Black Lives Matter is one of those. And we've told you, reported that George Soros, the white Hungarian billionaire atheist revolutionary, is funding Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is the one who was, you know, marching, singing, frying like pigs in a blanket, frying like bacon, talking about policemen. It's amazing. And so that's just one particular group that's being stirred up. And then we've got the Occupy folks. We've got the MoveOn.org sending out email courtesy of George Soros's billions of dollars. And it's led to some real problems in our street. In fact, let's revisit this CBS report we played earlier in the week.
Police use flashbang grenades to push back crowds in Portland.
Someone has a gun.
Tempers flared when protesters swarmed a bridge and stopped traffic, according to witness Brandon Branch.
Somebody got out the car, pulled out a gun, said, "You don't move, I'm going to kill you."
Oh my God, there's a fight. This is terrible. No, it's being shot in the air. Someone got shot.
One person was shot, and two were booked on charges of attempted murder.
Police are showing up.
Last night, anti-Trump protesters marched across the nation.
Not my president!
In Chicago, they rallied in front of a Trump hotel. In Miami, they shut down a freeway. And in Atlanta, they burned American flags.
I understand everybody has their opinions.
On a United Airlines flight from San Francisco to Mexico, the pilot made this announcement after an alleged racially charged election scuffle between passengers.
Nobody's going to change their minds by arguing. And let's keep our opinions to ourselves on this particular matter at this particular time.
No racism, no bigotry.
The protests continued today in New York City. And in downtown Los Angeles, where thousands flooded the streets.
I think that we can make waves. I don't know if we can get this racist fascist out of power, but we can at least make our voices heard. We can keep up the pressure, and I think pressure is important.
These demonstrators tell me they're determined to continue these protests throughout the weekend across the country and arena. There is even a million woman march scheduled for the day after President Trump is inaugurated in January.
All right, so that's a report from CBS. And you know, you've been hearing these reports, but I just wanted to remind you. But if you think these are organic, you know what? I don't think so. And let me just tell you why. I've been telling you this, but I'll repeat it. George Soros met just this week, the first 3 days of this week, with Democratic donors, and they're plotting to take back power from Trump. And they don't mean, you know, like through the electoral process. They have other things in mind. They're called the Democracy Alliance, and they met at the Mandarin Hotel beginning on Sunday, and they're making plans so the words of the president, Gara Lamarche: what steps we will take together to resist the assaults that are coming and take back power from Washington. So they have tons of money. In order to be a member, you have to donate at least $200,000 a year to the groups of their choice. And you must also pay a $30,000 annual fee to just be part of the Democracy Alliance staff. So it's a very big money deal, and that money goes for lots of really bad things. And I want to mention one of these. I touched on this earlier in the week, and I want to revisit it. Because as you will recall, last Wednesday, the day after Donald Trump won the election, Mrs. Clinton and her husband came out dressed in purple. He had a purple tie on. Mrs. Kane came out dressed in purple also. And when the press asked them about that, they claimed it was because America is split between, red and blue, and now they're purple. But, you know, there are, Wayne Mattson has written something that I shared earlier, but I want to go back to that. He has a different view of this. He said, defeated Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton is not about to go quietly into that good night. On the morning after her surprising and unanticipated defeat at the hands of Republican Party upstart Donald Trump, Mrs. Clinton, her husband, entered the ballroom of the Art Deco New Yorker Hotel in Midtown Manhattan and were both adorned in purple attire. And then he goes on to say, the purple revolution will resist all efforts by the Trump administration to push back against the globalist policies of the Clintons and soon-to-be ex-president Barack Obama. The purple revolution will also seek to make the Trump administration a short one through Soros-style street protests and political disruption. Now, where does he get that? Because there are color revolutions going on all over the world. And if you can look on Wikipedia yourself and find this description. Color revolution is a term that was widely used by worldwide media to describe various related movements that developed in several societies in the former Soviet Union and the Balkans during the early 2000s. The term has been applied to a number of revolutions elsewhere, including the Middle East. Some observers have called the events a revolutionary wave, the origins of which can be traced back to the 1986 People Power Revolution, also known as the Yellow Revolution in the Philippines. Who will forget the Georgia's Rose Revolution, Ukraine's Orange Revolution? And there are similar things happening in these revolutions. They usually work through non-governmental organizations, student activists, and they get out in the streets and do what we're seeing in the streets. And so many people feel that this is what's going to be known as, not publicly, as the Purple Revolution. And that Mrs. Clinton and her husband and Mrs. Kane and the rest of them know full well that they are not handing over the reins of power peacefully, that behind the scenes, their friends like George Soros, who was Mrs. Clinton's big, he was in charge of her fundraising, is in D.C. this week, plotting, planning, making, contributions, no doubt, to Black Lives Matter and other of these subversive groups. And so don't be fooled. As I've said before, don't be fooled. All right, I want to change the subject just for a second because it's to something lighter, brighter. We have so much to be grateful for. Christmas is coming up. I don't know about you, but I just love Christmas. And maybe we could actually talk about Jesus at Christmas without having to, worry about losing our jobs or, being sneered at? We're going to make sure that we can openly speak of our faith in a way that's winsome. And so AFA, as a way of celebrating and promoting, keeping Christ in Christmas, has created these cute little wristbands. And they say, keep Christ in Christmas. And if you go to afa.net/Christmas, afa.net/Christmas, you can get one wristband free. But if you want more, you have to pay for those. And remember that when you order these, your donations go to help the work of American Family Association, American Family Radio. We can use your resources, and we promise to use them as faithfully as we possibly can. So go to afa.net/Christmas and get your free wristband, and then order some more too for your family and friends. All right. Well, coming up next, there's been a big dust-up about Steve Bannon and Breitbart and whether they're part of the alt-right and neo-Nazis and white nationalists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Steve Bannon's going to be the chief strategist in the White House. So what is the truth? about all of that. We'll talk about that next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I know the best people. I know the best managers.
Given Donald Trump's frequent promises to lure the best to work for him and the billionaire's reputation as a savvy, if harsh, judge of personnel.
You're fired.
His first hires as president-elect reflect distinct managerial instincts. In choosing Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus as White House Chief of Staff, Mr. Trump tapped the ultimate Beltway insider, whose mastery of electioneering helped win the White House and whose relationships with lawmakers will prove critical to the Trump legislative agenda.
He brings people together. He gets them to buy in on that shared vision and brings out the best in people to get successful things done.
But Mr. Trump created a co-equal position for Steve Bannon, the campaign CEO appointed chief strategist and senior counselor in the White House. A former naval officer, Bannon brought managerial discipline to the campaign, but under his leadership, the conservative website Breitbart appealed to the alt-right, with headlines that demeaned Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol as a, quote, renegade Jew, and advanced notions like birth control makes women unattractive and crazy.
Breitbart does give me a real pause about sometimes they're going well beyond accepted norms.
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid said through an aide, President-elect Trump's choice of Steve Bannon as his top aide signals that white supremacists will be represented at the highest levels in Trump's White House. Dispatched to defend Bannon was his new co-equal.
So I haven't seen any of these things that people are crying out about. But look, it's a good team. It works. And I think if people saw the last few months in the campaign, it worked very well.
All right, Sandy Rios, back with you. Well, it's not the first time we've talked about this. This is probably the biggest announcement of the week. I know there are more to come, but I think many of us were heartsick when Reince Priebus was appointed chief of staff. And then we were really happy when Steve Bannon was appointed, chief strategist and senior counsel. And the whole world is flummoxed that now they're supposed to be on co-equal footing. Steve Bannon was, however, introduced in the press release. His name came first. So people are buzzing, talking about this. Let me just give you an idea of what's being said about Steve Bannon. Southern Poverty Law Center. Steve Bannon was the main driver behind Breitbart becoming a white, ethno-nationalist propaganda mill. Trump should rescind this hire. In his victory speech, Trump said he intended to be president for all Americans. Bannon should go. California Democrat Representative Adam Schiff tweeted, selection of Steve Bannon for senior White House role, unsurprising but alarming. His alt-right, anti-Semitic, misogynistic views don't belong in the White House. And then the Council of American Islamic Relations weighed in. They called Steve Bannon an anti-Muslim conspiracy theorist and white nationalist alt-right extremist. All right, so you're hearing this last night on Fox. There was only one defender of Steve Bannon on the panel last night. And so I've asked Matt Boyle to join us this morning. Matt is the Washington political editor for Breitbart. And I thought it would be a good thing to ask Matt to join me so we could actually talk about what Breitbart is, what it is not, who Steve Bannon is, and who he is not. Matt is the, again, Washington political editor. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. How would you describe, if you were talking to someone who hadn't heard of Breitbart, how would you describe it?
We are a conservative news outlet that is mostly online. We also have a radio platform on SiriusXM. And what we're essentially doing is we're doing the reporting that the mainstream media won't do. We're reporting on the people that showed up and voted, that voted in this election, that handed Donald Trump a landslide electoral victory in the Electoral College. 306 electoral votes is no small number. And the mainstream media all missed it, and we saw it because we were out there actually doing what's called journalism. The New York Times, CNN, and all these other outlets don't do journalism anymore. They are what I like to call swamp Pravda. They serve entirely to protect the reputation and do political public relations work for the political class in Washington, D.C. Breitbart News does journalism. That's why if you read Breitbart during the course of this election, you knew what the outcome was going to be.
Isn't it funny that I don't even know who that person was on James' clip that we played a minute ago when he said, Breitbart, he was a Republican operative. It's beyond the accepted norm. The accepted norm, yeah, of the establishment here in Washington. I want to give people just a bit of an idea, Matt, about some of the things that you guys have covered this past few years. For one thing, you came out with strong reporting on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You came out relentlessly exposing the Iran deal. You came out talking about the refugee resettlement industry, which is nobody talked about that. That's, you know, the sneaky resettlement primarily of Muslim refugees around and people from coming across the border without communities knowing about it. The effects on the community. Breitbart reported that. You also reported all the time on illegal border policies, what was happening with the agents and how they felt about it. And then, of course, the whole business of the establishment, whether it's on the left or the right, and the fact that the middle America has suffered at the hands of both. Those are the kinds of things that I know Breitbart has been reporting. Matt, where is your readership now? I think it's kind of like off the charts, but I don't know the numbers.
Yeah, the latest numbers are we're well over I forget the latest numbers off the top of my head, but I think we're well over 240 million page views from the month of October. I don't know what our November numbers are at this point, but the well over 240 million page views. We're bigger than Politico. And we've supplanted many mainstream media outlets because of the fact that these guys, look, they make it easy for us. Like, the way I see it is that the Politico and the New York Times and the Washington Post could easily crush us by actually doing journalism, right? They have newsrooms that are, you know, 10 times the size of ours in many cases. They have tons and tons of seasoned professional journalists working at all of these different mainstream media outlets, yet they don't cover the news. They're not writing about the people, the concerns of the people throughout the Beltway. They're not writing about the people, the concerns of the people in Florida or North Carolina. They don't care. They're not listening. I saw an ex New York Times editor in the wake of the election. They were trying to figure out what went wrong with Donald Trump. Well, it turns out this ex New York Times editor wrote this piece, and it's fantastic. He was an entertainment editor out in their LA bureau. But was talking about how their political coverage is literally dictated a year in advance by a series of editors sitting around a boardroom in Manhattan. That's not journalism. The New York Times, CNN, and the Washington Post and Politico, none of these places are actually doing journalism. Breitbart is doing journalism. What we're doing is we're going out there and listening to what the public has to say and what they care about and what they're concerned about, and then we're reporting on that, and we're reporting on those issues that are important to people. That's called journalism. The rest of the mainstream media needs to do a lot of reflection after they told us over and over and over again that Hillary Clinton was going to win this election and win it in a landslide. She didn't, and we knew that that wasn't going to happen, and that's why we were, that's the reason why we did. It's because we were out there listening to the actual electorate.
You know, Matt, one could say, well, you know, of course he would say that. He's with Breitbart. He has a bias. But I have to say that multiple sources reported in great detail of the meetings between John Podesta and editors, writers, on-air personalities in the home of John Podesta, having him cook, you know, personal meals, strategizing how to help Hillary Clinton win. We had the New York Times editor just writing a letter a couple of days ago pledging that the New York Times will now actually print the news. They promised to stop, whatever words he used, but I'm going to use mine, editorializing. They're going to actually start, you know, printing stuff that's true. That in itself is a news story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you know what? It's not just Breitbart, by the way, that's rising up into this void that's been left by the mainstream media. There's other places that are fantastic. In fact, if you look at the Daily Caller over there, what Tucker Carlson and his team is doing, what Laura Ingraham's team over at LifeSet is doing, look, there's a huge opening. The reason why this opening exists is because the mainstream media has failed to do their job. They accuse us, when you hear the term alt-right, what they're accusing us of is presenting an alternate reality to the public. I don't know if you saw that there was Carl Bernstein, one of the who worked with Bob Woodward on the Watergate investigation back in the 70s, and to Richard Nixon, accused the Washington Post journalist accused Matt Drudge of presenting an alternate reality to the world. That's not true. We're presenting the actual reality. Quite clearly, Donald Trump won the election. In case the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times and Politico and CNN haven't noticed and it hasn't sunk in yet, Donald Trump won the election in a landslide. 306 electoral votes is huge win for Donald Trump. So he won the election in a landslide. The only place you were hearing that was places like Breitbart and the other new media. The rest of the mainstream media was ignoring that. They were ignoring the truth of what was happening out there. And they're the alternate reality. And their alternate reality and then CNN's alternate reality, all is well in America. And that there isn't a refugee crisis. There isn't a national security crisis. There isn't Obamacare destroying our healthcare system. But in the real world, back, you know, on planet Earth, where people are actually struggling, those problems and many, many more are actually happening. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring those stories to the forefront. That isn't an alternate reality. That's the real reality.
You know, Matt, I've been doing news, talk radio, and television for a long, long time. And I was scratching my head trying to remember when I first heard the term alt-right. And I have to say, I think it's been during this election cycle. I don't ever remember people using that term. I don't know if you know the origin of it. I mean, SPLC, that sounds like something they would coin. But I honestly don't know who started this. Do you?
You know, I don't know either. So, in fact, one of my colleagues here at Breitbart, Milo Yiannopoulos, did a deep dive story into kind of the origins of it and kind of creating, laying out a taxonomy for who's in the movement, who's good and who's bad, and what the different forms of it are. But you know what? I mean, it really wasn't that prominent until Hillary Clinton decided to do a speech about it in Reno, Nevada. So again, this is a problem entirely created by the Democrats. What we've been doing here at Breitbart has been journalism, right? And so the reason why you see the entire mainstream media freaking out about Steve Bannon, who is our executive chairman until he went to go work for the Trump campaign as the CEO back in August. And by the way, it is thanks in large part, not entirely, but in large part to Steve, that Donald Trump won this election. I mean, the campaign was in crisis in August, and he brought the team together. He brought discipline to the team. As somebody who's worked for him at Breitbart for years, I have to say, I mean, he's made Breitbart, he's helped carry out the vision of Breitbart. And then when he went to the Trump campaign, he helped carry out the vision there. I mean, he was a critical player in the election of Donald Trump. The reason why people are just flipping out against him in the media right now is because they're mad at Trump, and it's the same people that throughout the media that wanted to stop Trump from winning the election, and now they're just trying to express their outrage and channel their outrage against Steve. And then assuming that doesn't work, then they'll turn their fire on somebody else. That's what they're doing because, the mainstream media recognizes that they are – Their business model, their career model, is in danger. I don't think I can understate this. If they continue to refuse to report the real truth about what's happening out here, the reality that I was talking about that Breitbart's reporting on, they're going to go out of business. CNN's business model is in jeopardy. The New York Times' business model is in jeopardy. The New York Times was not always the newspaper of record in America. And that day may come again where they're not. And they're facing a real crisis in the media right now. And instead of actually solving the problem and addressing the fact that they have refused to report accurate information over the course of this election, they're doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on the failed tactics that led to their business models being in crisis in the first place.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also think it's not just for the sport of attacking Breitbart or Steve. It's that they are so afraid. You know, Steve really has been an iron force. And it is pretty amazing that Donald Trump has chosen him to be his chief strategist. I mean, that's chief strategist and senior counsel. Honestly, Matt, would you have seen a year ago, could you have envisioned something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of things have happened in a year, Sandy. I don't know if I could have seen any of this happening a year out. But yeah, look, Steve is going to be a major player in the White House. And, you know, I mean, look, I think he's a force for good and inside the White House. I know he's a good and decent and honest man. All of this stuff that the media and the Democrats and the left are out there pushing about him, and even some people on the right, it just isn't true. I've worked with him for years now, and I have to say he's a good and decent, honest man. He cares about all Americans. He cares about all hardworking people in this country, regardless of your race, regardless of your religion. He really does care, and he wants people to succeed, and he's done everything that he can to help as many people as he can. And, you know, I think he's going to be a good leader. I really do. I think he'll be he'll be a good advisor to the president.
Hey, Matt, can you stay with me just for one more segment so we could talk about a little bit more about who Steve is and what he's actually doing and what's going to happen to Breitbart?
Sure.
Okay, good. That's great. My guest is Matthew Boyle. What's his name? Matt Boyle. He's the Washington political editor for Breitbart, which now has 240 million page views. It's experiencing that. It's an amazing thing. It really is. Who would have ever thought when some of us thought that we were the only people who felt the way we did about refugee resettlement, about TPP, about all these things, who would have known that so many Americans felt the same way, came out and voted, and made their voice heard, and now that Steve Bannon would be the chief strategist and senior counsel for the new president of the United States, it's a remarkable story. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about more about who Steve Bannon is and what the future of Breitbart will be without him. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Despite such assurances, West Wing veterans and students of its workings predicted trouble between two such different men and warned against the creation of rival power centers at the dawn of a presidency.
Donald Trump got elected with a pretty broad coalition of perspectives and views around the country. So all of that needs to be reflected in the White House. But I think the White House runs well only if there is one chief of staff clearly in charge.
Chris Whipple interviewed all the living chiefs of staff for his forthcoming book, The Gatekeepers, How the White House Chiefs of Staff Define Every Presidency.
From Watergate to Iran-Contra to the war in Iraq to the rollout of Obamacare, the chief of staff really makes a difference between success and failure. And so one of the critical things is not only who becomes chief, but whether that chief is empowered to, among other things, be the honest broker of information and to speak truth to power.
Another point of potential conflict between Mr. Priebus and Bannon is House Speaker Paul Ryan. A fellow Wisconsinite, Priebus is among Ryan's closest friends in politics. At Breitbart, however, Bannon championed Ryan's primary challenger.
All right, that's an interesting report from James Rosen on Fox just a couple of days ago. This is a fascinating story. There is no question about it that Donald Trump should appoint Reince Priebus, the head of the RNC, the establishment darling, really. Although, you know, who knows what he's going to do. I wasn't happy about that appointment, I have to admit. And then Steve Bannon, editor-in-chief of Breitbart, who left, you know, the news outlet to go to be the CEO of the campaign and successfully led it. And now he's going to be right beside Donald Trump. And he and Reince Priebus are not on the same page. And you heard those former chiefs of staff talk about how this is kind of setting up an interesting dichotomy. I do remember that when Ronald Reagan was president, there were problems with his chief of staff. It's Michael Deaver kept people from President Reagan, and there were a lot of complaints about that. The chief of staff is generally the gatekeeper, but sounds like maybe this is going to be a new game. I would have to say, as a person who's led an organization, not in a country, but it is good to have people on your team who disagree and feel both very free to talk to you, one in one ear and one in the other ear, and then you make the decision. And that may be what Donald Trump is going for here. I just don't know. Matt Boyle is my guest, and he's the Washington political editor for Breitbart, who has seen incredible success, really, under the leadership of Steve. And one more thing I need to say. Andrew Breitbart was a friend of mine. I used to interview him in Chicago before before Andrew Breitbart was Andrew Breitbart. He was sort of beginning to be known. He just had a vision. He was the most unique person, and who died an untimely death. And after he died, after a series of changes, Steve Bannon took over. They built an embassy, what they call the embassy here in D.C., and Breitbart continued to grow. And so, Matt, when did you come to Washington to join Steve? Or were you there on the ground when he first came?
I was already in D.C. I was working for Daily Caller for a few years leading up to when I came to Breitbart. I came over to Breitbart a little bit after the 2012 election, maybe a month or so, after Romney failed when he probably should have won. But that was the beginning of this. I think the big battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party that was finally won this year in Republicans obviously just took back the White House, kept both houses of Congress. That's when I came over to work with Steve was probably early December 2012. So. Yep.
Matt, Steve has an incredible resume, and I know something about it. Maybe you know more than I do. He's a former naval commander. He's a graduate of Harvard. Mm-hmm. He was a partner with Goldman Sachs. And one thing I found out about him this week that I did not know, that he was one of the first investors into the Seinfeld series.
Yep, and so that's in many ways a large part of where he's actually a self-made business guy, too. So he's worth several million dollars himself. And he, he's got a fantastic career in business. His history in the Navy, he was a naval officer, warfare officer. His history in the Navy really guides a lot of his lifestyle, and in how he thinks. He's actually very fascinated in world affairs, follows everything that's happening on the world stage. And here at home, very connected in the military. And in fact, his daughter is a West Point graduate and served two tours in Iraq. Again, very, very military connected family. He's an inspiring guy. He works around the clock. I can tell you right now from working for him for the last 4 years, if the phone rings at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m, he's going to answer the phone. So he'll be there to take care of it. And he's always been doing that. He's a good guy.
You know, let me go into something. This is the label anti-Semitic came from a divorce order. It came from the records of his divorce, something that he allegedly said to his wife about their daughter going to school with too many Jews. But then they ended up sending their daughter there. So that's where this originated. Everybody knows that all kinds of things can be said in divorce hearings. And the proof, I guess, really is in the pudding, Matt. And now we have all kinds of, Andrew Breitbart was Jewish. And so is, our good friend Joel Pollack, who I knew from Chicago, is your, I don't know exactly, was he editor-at-large, editor-at-chief out on the West Coast?
Yeah, he's an editor-at-large, and he runs our California section, so for our whole California vertical. And Joel, by the way, was on, in the last month, few weeks of the campaign, we had him embedded with the traveling press with Donald Trump. So he was on the press plane with Trump. So he's one of our most senior guys here at Breitbart.
Let me read what he just wrote. His title is Stephen K. Bannon, Friend of the Jewish People, Defender of Israel. I have worked with Stephen K. Bannon, President-elect Donald Trump's new chief strategist and senior counsel, for nearly 6 years. I can say without hesitation, Steve is a friend of the Jewish people and a defender of Israel, as well as being a passionate American patriot and great leader. A word or two about my credentials. I am an Orthodox Jew. I hold a Master of Arts degree in Jewish Studies. My thesis at the Isaac and Jesse Kaplan Center at the University of Cape Town dealt with the troubled status of Jews in an increasingly anti-Israel and anti-Semitic post-apartheid South Africa. I believe myself to be a qualified judge of what is and is not anti-Semitic. And so that's what Joel writes about him. And by the way, Joel, interestingly enough, you probably know this, Matt, but the reason I met Joel in Chicago is because he ran for Congress against Jan Schakowsky, who is, of course, the wife of,
Robert Kramer of Democracy Partners, a Democracy Alliance organization. They're the group that was caught on camera planning the violence at the rallies by James O'Keefe videos, if you remember those that came out during the course of the
election.
Oh,
yes, I do. I just, yes, sir.
You remember the, we're going to put duck costumes out there attacking Trump. That was, Hillary Clinton came up with the idea they wanted duck costumes. That was that guy.
So, well, I also remember
that the character.
Kramer is the one who said, we go into community, we hire mentally ill people, we hire union thugs, and he laughed about, they'll do anything. They'll do anything. And so we saw it, played out on the streets. So his wife is Jan Schakowsky, and Joel challenged her in Chicago for Congress, and that's, again, when I knew him, which is a funny little sidebar. But, all right, so Steve is a big loss to Breitbart, Matt, and what's going to happen with your, what's going to happen?
Well, we're going to expand significantly. So right now we're in the process of, by the way, if any news people or potential aspiring journalists are listening, please do reach out to us because we are hiring like crazy right now. We are going through a giant stack of resumes. We are planning to expand Breitbart both here at home across the United States and also overseas. We're planning to open bureaus in Paris and Berlin. So we're going to be covering the presidential elections in Paris. We're seeing a very similar kind of dynamic of what happened here and what happened in the UK with Brexit happening in France right now. And then also in Germany, that's kind of like the heart of this globalism and elitism with Angela Merkel, who seems to have really been one of the driving forces behind creating this migrant crisis that we're seeing. They brought in hundreds of thousands of Islamic refugees into Germany, and it's fundamentally changing that country, not for the better. And so we're going to be there documenting it and reporting on it because, again, much like what we're seeing here, the media over there is not covering these stories. So, and we've already got our London Bureau, and we're going to be boosting that up a lot more as well. And those guys have done phenomenal reporting in London. And so expect Breitbart to get bigger, badder, stronger, better on the world stage. We're going to get we're boosting up. We're going to be the place for news on the Trump White House and on everything related to all the issues that matter to people all across the world.
Well, you know, some are saying, and I agree with them, that there is an international Marxist movement. And a lot of what we're seeing is in the plan. People have a plan. Some people on the left have a very big plan for all of the rest of us. But I think this election was a major stump in their toes. And so, God willing, we have drawn a line in the sand, and now we just got to hold it. If you were to guess I'm not going to ask you that question. Let's just ask you this. Do you think that, how do you see Steve holding the line in the White House? How do you think that, how do you see his role playing out there, Matt?
I think it's not just holding the line. I think it's advancing back the other way, right? The left really, really moved the needle over the course of the Obama years. And even before then, in the Clinton years, and then the Bush years was just about like hitting the brakes, right, and stopping the move to the left, and then Obama moved us even further. I think Trump's going to go on offense. I think that, and I think Steve's going to help him do it. Steve's a visionary kind of guy. He's somebody who understands the concept of a 30-front war, right, in that we're fighting multiple different battles at the exact same time in multiple different arenas and theaters. And so he can walk, chew gum, and do 15 other things all at the same time. And I think you're going to see them do that. I think you're going to see us advance back in the direction away from the way the left has taken us over the last 30 or so years in American politics and on the world stage as well. I think you're going to see a really thoughtful strategic effort on behalf of the White House. And I think that's a good thing.
I do too, Matt. I mean, I think that all of us are breathing a sigh of relief. How long it will last, I don't know, but we have been desperate for movement. It's as though there's been just no leadership here in D.C. And the American people that listen to me every day call it, what can we do? What can we do? Well, there wasn't much they could do except go out and vote, and vote they did. And so now they deserve leadership, and it's encouraging to know that someone like Steve will be there to keep the temperature up and hold feet to the fire and make sure that, you know, these staffing decisions that are being made this week are key. And I can only imagine there must be an all-out battle behind scenes between Ryan Priebus and Steve Bannon over these personnel picks. It's just an amazing thing. I mean, we just saw today that Mike Rogers, who was the head of the House Intelligence Committee, who is doesn't have clean hands when it comes to Benghazi. I don't mean he's responsible. I just mean there's some secrets there that were hidden, and now he's out. And so those are the – I don't know. I'm not putting that at the feet of Steve Bannon, but I just know that he knows the whole story there. And we are seeing some good things happen, and we'll just have to see what unfolds in the future. Matt, listen, thank you for all of your hard work and all of your good writing, and enjoy your little bit of a break I think you're having. And I appreciate you joining us in the middle of trying to take some time off.
All right, thanks, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, well, that was Matt Boyle, the Washington political editor of Breitbart, and just wanted you to hear from him and have a conversation, because you can hear a lot of criticism about Breitbart and Steve Bannon, and so I just wanted you to know what the lay of the land is, what's true and what isn't true. This has been Sandy Rios. I want to remind you, don't forget, we have those beautiful Christmas wrist bracelets available for you to order, and you can get the first one for free, and the rest of them, you might have to pay a little bit of something, but it's to keep Christ in Christmas. And so we just encourage you to go to our AFA store and order those and have them for Christmas for your family and friends and for yourself when you go out shopping. All right, Sandy Rios saying goodbye for today on AFR Talk.